You're listening to the NetMums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Alison Perry. Coming up on this week's show...
I think what we do as parents sometimes is we want to stop our children. We want to stop our children. Obviously, we want to stop them from feeling pain. We want to stop them from experiencing awful things. And then when they are feeling pain and when they are experiencing those awful things, we naturally beat ourselves up about it. Yeah, and we think, what could I have done differently? How can I change this? How can I make this better? And often the way we can make it better is by sitting and listening to them and not, in their eyes, making it all about us.
But before all of that, this episode of the NetMums podcast is brought to you by Johnson's Baby. Now, Alison, do you have a calming bedtime routine?
Well, I usually fall asleep in front of whatever telly program we're watching, and then I drag myself to bed where I scroll for half an hour. Oh, it doesn't sound very calming, does it?
It really doesn't. Now, maybe while you have a think about what you might do to wind down better from the day, let me tell you that for little ones, Johnson's calming bedtime routine, in other words, a bath, a massage and some quiet time, is clinically proven to help your baby sleep better.
Wow, that's impressive. But I'm not that surprised, you know. My children have always slept so much better after a bath and some quiet bedtime stories.
Johnson's range of trusted products are soft on baby skin and smell amazing. From Johnson's Baby Bedtime Wash to Johnson's Baby Bedtime Lotion, which is designed with purposeful and gentle ingredients to protect for healthy feeling baby skin from day one.
The product that I love is Johnson's Baby Bedtime Bath. The scent of it just takes me back to when my twins were babies and I was wrapping them up in fluffy white towels. Oh my goodness, stop me, Wendy. I'm feeling broody.
No, I get it. Now, you can pick up Johnson's Baby Bedtime range in supermarkets and pharmacies nationwide right now. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode. Now, our guest today talked on her Instagram a couple of weeks ago about getting the Sunday scaries, and I really liked her name for it. It's the Sunday doomies in our house, and I get them big time, especially in autumn. I am fully that person who basically you shouldn't talk to between October and February because I'm just miserable. And my husband is completely and utterly immune. He's like an elf. So the minute the clocks go back, he's like, it's Christmas. And then he starts getting all excited and I just get more and more peeved. So Alison, do you get the doomies, scaries? And if so, what do you call them?
Oh, what do I call them? I mean, it's just like the inevitability of, you know, being an adult and the reality of grown up life, right? And that's what I call them. It's snappy.
That's a cheery start to this podcast.
I know.
Right there.
Do you know what? I kind of like sit somewhere between, oh, the clocks are turning back and it's cozy and we can cozy up and we don't have to go out and socialise in the evenings and it's quite nice versus, oh, I just want a bit more sunlight and I just need, I don't know, I'm somewhere in between the two. I don't know.
Well, I know that our guest is going to have an opinion on this. Let's have her official showbiz intro, please.
Absolutely. We're joined today by journalist, podcaster and author Bryony Gordon. Bryony is a huge advocate for talking openly about all things mental health. She started up Support Community Mental Health Mates and she's written loads of books, including Mad Girl and Mad Woman. Carrying on the theme of honest conversations, her new podcast, The Life of Bryony, sees her covering all subjects and taboos with a range of guests. Bryony, a warm welcome to the NetMums podcast.
Oh, wow. Thanks for having me. What a lovely intro.
Welcome back.
Well, I know.
Now, this is the second time. Bryony has joined us before many moons ago.
Many, many lunar eclipses ago.
It's a lunar eclipse when we're recording, folks. So if this is just three mad women talking, just bear with us, okay?
I think it's relatable. People will be like, how many Mercury retrogrades ago was this conversation?
We're all just clinging on to life by the fingernails.
Yeah, trying to blame the stars and the planets for the patriarchy, basically. That's what I'm like. I'm so sick of blaming everything on the patriarchy that I'm now going to just blame it on the moon. The moon's like, what did I do?
I love it.
Now, I want to talk to you about secondary school because you've been settling your daughter into year seven, haven't you?
Yes.
And we had all the fun of the fair last year for that. So tell me, how has that gone?
Well, I mean, I don't want to jinx it, but so far so good. But we're only like a month in. So far it's gone well.
Great.
So we're very lucky. She's gone from the local primary school to the local state school. And I think that there's that thing, isn't there, where I think what happens is like the seriously bright kids go off, don't they, to like the very, you know, highfalutin schools. And it's funny because suddenly she's then moved up from being sort of in the middle, just like, you know, and she's now like really enjoying it. And she's like, wow, I can really see her self-belief and her confidence growing in a way that it, so it's really interesting. She's like, I'm in the top set at maths, which was not, you know, I don't want to like reveal too much about her, you know, math scores or whatever. But anyway, so she seems fine. Who knows? I'm very aware that, you know, I like to take things as they come on any given day and not look too far into the future because who knows what will happen.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, tracking apps for kids have been in the news recently with Mike and Zara Tyndall spotted using them. Where do you stand on them? Because having a child who's just started secondary school, usually that's when parents often start finding it quite a useful tool. I am fully in the track my kids camp. And I think, Wendy, you're not, are you?
No, I'm in the she should have been home. Best ringer camp.
What about you, Bryony?
Well, I mean, I am. So, again, I'm very lucky in that her school is on the same road as us. So she doesn't ever go.
So, brilliant.
So there's not too far to. So I. Okay. So but I did do a complete U-turn on phones as soon as. So I was very much like, she will not have a phone until she's 46, you know? She will not have a smartphone until she can darn well afford to get one herself. And I'm going to, and she's going to have a brick phone and all of that stuff so she can communicate. I was really on board with that. And then we went to try and buy a brick phone and it was like so unwieldy. And I saw her thinking, it was more I thought, oh my god, she'll be able to get she'll be able to run rings around me with that. I suddenly realized that actually I kind of needed us to be on the same software so I yeah. could take control of her phone in a way that with a Nokia I just couldn't because I'm my you know I'm
because the rest of us haven't used Nokia since we were 22.
Yeah, and I don't, and it sounds like a cop out, and you know whatever, like it's my choice, so fuck it. Sorry, I don't mean to, you know, but like so. But she is. What's really interesting is that so she has this phone, and but she doesn't really because it is. Essentially just a sort of like cellular walkie-talkie. There's no social media on it. There's no, you know, she can't access anything without asking our permission first through like a, you know, so I just, unless she's got a secret burner phone, I don't know, like that she's hiding somewhere. But so she's...
Oh God, I'd love it if she did. That would be yeah. so good.
So I'm all for tracking my child, but I don't, I'm not so worried about, the tracking isn't the thing about phones that worries me. It's more things like social media and the ready availability of stuff that she shouldn't really be seeing at 11. So that's the kind of area I'm more concerned with. And that I focus on more than I'm quite allow her freedom and like a certain amount of freedom and independence, even though we live in like central London. But because we're lucky to live in an area that's quite sort of, it feels quite, there's quite a community. So I'm less worried about her whereabouts when she's physically distanced from me as I'm more concerned about where she might be in front of me on her phone.
Yeah. Well, that kind of leads on to our next question, actually, because we were going to ask what kind of mum you are. We know what kind of writer you are. We know what kind of podcaster you are. We know that you're an In Your Knickers marathon runner. But what sort of mum is Bryony Gordon?
I think I'm a very embarrassing one. Because I run around in my pants. I obviously would like to think that I'm a cool mum, you know, like, and that all her friends are like, oh my God, your mum's so cool.
I think anyone who thinks they're a cool mum by default probably isn't.
Also, having a cool mum is not like, I have friends who had really cool mums and they were like, yeah, but in reality, they were raging narcissists. Do you know what I mean? So like, there's always that thing of like what we put on to other people, but it's more important what we are like in the home.
And 100%.
I guess I'm not that different as a mum as I am as a friend. Oh, no, I'm obviously not a friend. Like, I don't want to, I'm not like, oh, energy going.
Just so much less effing and jeffing, maybe.
What I mean is that, like, I am, well, I don't know if there is less effing and jeffing, but I am very open and honest when it is within reason. But I'm quite strict. I don't take any
good, always the way.
So there's like firm boundaries. I'm quite like, you know, like I you know, it's what was I like as a mum for the first 4 years of her life? Not great, because I was in active alcoholism. What am I like now? She's 11 and I am incredibly lucky to have a recovery program behind me. Like, everything I know about parenting has been taught to me in sobriety, basically. And I am so grateful for that.
So if you could go back and tell new mum Bryony something, what would it be? Like, what do you think back then she needed to hear?
I don't know. I'm always... like those kind of if you could go back questions. I'm of the opinion that like we all need to go through what we need to go through to get to the place we need to be, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And so I don't think anything it's a bit like you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. Or you could, in my case, make me drink. You couldn't make me stop drinking. But like it doesn't really matter what anyone would have said to me. Like, I had to learn it myself, you know? And so I guess if there was one thing I could have said to, you know, is that you're okay. You are not the worst person in the world. You're okay. You know, like, you don't need to worry that you're the worst person in the world. Like, you are an ill person that does stupid things sometimes because of that illness, but there is kind of like, there is, and it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay.
And as a recovering alcoholic, what do you think about the kind of the wine o'clock culture that we see on Instagram and social media? It's become quite a big thing in parenting.
Yeah, so I'm really interesting in that I am a recovering alcoholic. I'm not anti-alcohol, and I don't, you know, I'm anti people ignoring the kind of the fact that for some people it's a terrible idea. I think I'm not at the same time vehemently like I don't break out into hives when I see someone joking about like gin o'clock, because it's like, everyone is different and everyone has their own ways of coping. And I think we're all going to be much better off if we're less judgmental about other ways of coping and more interested in our own kind of like, you know, well, why does that person need to cope? Like, what's what's going on, you know? And I don't, that, and that's not to say that everyone that has a gin at 6 o'clock is an alcoholic, because they're just not, you know? I get it. You know, I get it. Like, we live in a culture that, you know, until relatively recently, the only way we knew, most of us in Britain knew how to cope, was to go and have a glass of wine after work or at the end of the day. So it's like, well, and it's hard, you know, it's hard, the amount of pressure that mums today, you know, we are not, it's just hard, isn't it? Like, you're juggling lots and lots of different things. And I think that we used to live in communities that really supported parenting and supported mothers much more than we do now. You know, it takes a village to raise a child and stuff. And, you know, we're expected, like, this awful patriarchal notion of, like, we can have it all. I'm like, I don't want it all. Like, that is just too much pressure. Like, I don't want it all. Like,
we talk about it all the time on this podcast, that mums feel like they have to be the perfect mum, the perfect wife, partner, the perfect employee, friend, and there aren't enough hours in any day.
Just take your all, take all of it and fuck off. Like, I'm just not, yes. One or t'other, basically, one or t'other, you know, at any given time, I can do this, I can do that. And I can, you know, and I've been that person trying to do it all and fear, you know. I remember when my daughter was, you know, when I was on maternity leave, like, I basically sat on a birthing, when I was in labor, I basically sat on a birthing ball writing columns. You know, I was like, oh, I need to get, you know, it is kind of ridiculous.
So my eldest has just turned 14, and we're at that stage where some of her friends are allowed to drink alcohol.
Oh, really?
And just like a whole, yes. Well, I mean, actually 15 and 16 year old friends. So yeah, at barbecues and what have you. And when it happened a few weeks ago, and my 14-year-old was like, oh, can I have a cocktail? It really shocked me, because I was like, I'm not ready for this part of parenting. And, you know, at the moment, it is absolutely a hard no from me. I'm like,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And she was 13 when this happened, but she's only just turned 14. I was like, no, you're 13. You're not drinking alcohol. But then when I speak to other, friends who are parents, they're like, well, you know, we just feel like it normalizes it. And it means that, you know, we can keep an eye on what they're doing. And it's a real debate, I think, of parents of teens. And you are obviously coming up to that stage at some point soon.
Yeah.
So as, you know, an alcoholic in recovery, what plans do you have? What conversations do you think you will be having with your daughter about alcohol?
I mean, to be honest, we already have them, because I have explained to her that mummy, you know, is allergic to alcohol and can't have it. And, you know, and if she does, she does stupid things like run around in her pants. And she's like, but you do that now anyway. Yeah. So, like, okay, so here's what I feel, okay, is that there is nothing you can do in your power to, like, we like to think we have control over our children. The place I have come to this is that we like to think, oh, if I introduce my child to alcohol early, then they will normalize it. And that, you know, and the thing is, if someone's going to be an alcoholic, they're going to be an alcoholic, you know, and the way that you are around alcohol isn't probably going to influence that. It's going to be more influenced by, you know, childhood trauma, like, and I don't mean that, and, you know, people have there's so many factors to alcoholism that have nothing to do with alcohol itself, if you see what I mean. So
yeah,
like, you can't teach someone to drink responsibly. They're either going to do it or they're not, you know. So I have no control over that, okay. And I think it's sort of like stupid of me to believe I have any control over it, because I can't influence it in those terms. So what I think is a much better way of dealing with it is to say, alcohol is a thing that some people like, and it's for some people it's a nice thing, but for others it can really quickly get out of control. And if you feel like you fall into that latter camp, I want you to know you can talk to me about it. Because I think what we do as parents sometimes is we want to stop our children. We want to stop our children. Obviously, we want to stop them from feeling pain. We want to stop them from experiencing awful things. And then when they are feeling pain and when they are experiencing those awful things, we naturally beat ourselves up about it. Yeah. And we think, what could I have done differently? How can I change this? How can I make this better? And often the way we can make it better is by sitting and listening to them and not, in their eyes, making it all about us. Do you know what I mean? And we can't prevent pain in children, but what we can do is teach them that they can get through it and it won't kill them. and they're okay and that we love them regardless. Do you know what I mean? And we love them unconditionally. So that's sort of where I am. I don't think that really answers your question per se.
No, it really does. Because actually, it does the same kind of thing apply to you with mental health? You speak so much, so brilliantly about mental health, and your own mental health journey has been a roller coaster. Mm. How do you talk to Edie about that, and how will you apply those same kind of principles when it comes to talking to her about, because that's something that's completely out of your control as well.
I also think, you know, like there is no, we are obsessed with our children being happy, you know, and obviously that is, you know, we are only as happy as our unhappiest child and all of that stuff. And, you know, it's natural. Happy is good. Let's not beat around the bush. But like, it is not our job to deliver our children idyllic, 100% happy childhoods. What our job is to, as much as possible, do that, but then also equip them so that they can deal with life on life's terms, which is not happy all the time. And, you know, we're obsessed with this notion of teaching people to be happy, but actually I think the thing we need to be focusing on is teaching people how to be sad, because that's where the resilience is built. You know, it's we are naturally a sort of like a culture that wants to fix things, and that's a beautiful and lovely thing, but some things cannot be fixed, you know, some things cannot be fixed. And like, you know, you see this in life where awful things happen and horrible things happen and people are bullies, and you know, there is no way of making that better or making those bullies go away sometimes, you know, that you want to, or you want to, you know, and you know, your job is to say, this is not about you. This is, you know, this is not about you. This is about that other person. And darling, and I'm here for you. And, you know, like, I think it's teaching resilience and like, this will not kill you. You know, this will not kill you. I'm here to look after you. You are safe. You know, that's, it's about, I think my job as a parent is to make my child feel safe. You know, I think that's what it is. And to teach them the skills to how they can feel safe and
how they can feel safe by themselves.
Yeah.
Of their, or like learn that they're a place of safety.
So I also think that, like, you know, we see mental illness often as like a failure and a failing. And I've come to a place where I think actually sometimes, you know, most of the time mental illness is just like a very appropriate response to stuff going on in people's lives. And, you know, that doesn't have to be abuse or, you know, something terrible. It could be that they're struggling at school, that, you know, that they, you know, they're struggling with puberty. There's all sorts of things, you know, and our brain kind of goes into these, you know, these quite sophisticated in a way things to try and help them with that. And obviously it can feel like a faulty coping mechanism. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but like, you know, the job isn't, you know, obviously you want them to be able to cope with life and you want them to be happy, but it's not making them feel like they're failing because they're experiencing this thing as well, you know, like, because anxiety isn't a sign that you're failing as a human, you know, it's just a sign that you're a human.
Just a reminder that this episode of the Net Mums podcast is brought to you by Johnson's Baby.
You can have a calming bedtime routine for a restful night's sleep with Johnson's Baby. In fact, Johnson's calming bedtime routine, which is a bath, a massage and some quiet time, is clinically proven to help your baby sleep better.
Does it work on us parents too? I quite fancy a massage before bed.
Well, you can give it a try. You can pick up Johnson's Baby bedtime range in supermarkets and pharmacies nationwide. I'd be interested to know, we talked a little bit about the Sunday Doomies at the start, and I'd be interested to know how you kind of pick yourself up when you're feeling flat, because the onslaught of the darker nights is often a real trigger for people. And I'd be interested to know what you do on a daily basis to kind of, other than running in your pants, obviously.
Well, you know, I mean, there's so many things that I've built up over time that I do to try and keep myself as resilient as possible. And I mean, the knowledge that, you know, the most important thing is the knowledge that everything passes, everything, good stuff, the bad stuff, everything, you know. And it's like, hold on, babes, if you're lucky, everything passes, you know, like. And I think that it's obviously exercise is really important, exercising for the way it makes me feel rather than the way it makes me look. You know, it's not about kind of like having a sort of support network, listening to myself, not dismissing myself. You know, there's lots of...
Oh, that's a good one. We're all really good at that.
Well, the dismissing or the listening, Wendy?
No, the dismissing, not the listening.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, right? I think, you know, I don't, sort of connection, but... Oh, I don't know. Like it's, you know, it's multifaceted, but.
And some days it works and some days it doesn't, I guess.
I think the difference now is that I know it'll pass and it doesn't make it nice. You know, it doesn't make it better necessarily. It doesn't make the feeling any less horrible, but it sort of gives me a sort of context within which I can hold myself, you know? And I think just knowing that life is, it's all of that, you know, it's, and the highs come from the lows, you know?
Yeah. So your new podcast is all about speaking about things without shame. And it has struck me how conditioned we are to feel shame around so many things. I mean, there's that famous Brené Brown TED Talk, which just nails it so magnificently. Have you found that these conversations on your podcast have helped with that personally?
So I always remember when I went to rehab, I remember there was a counsellor who said to me, shame dies when you expose it to the light. And it is true, you know, yeah. shame keeps us sick. It really does. So for me, shame is like, such a horrible feeling, you know, it's a really horrible feeling. And I think the best sort of riposte to it is like calling it out and going, I'm feeling, and people go, oh my God, me too. Or, you know, yeah. or I feel it about this thing or that thing, you know, because often when I call out my feeling of shame, people are like, that's ridiculous. You know, like why, you know, I love having conversations. I'm not very good at like surface conversations. Do you know what I mean? Like I find myself like glazing over when people are
so
like,
it's nitty gritty or nothing is what you're saying. In there, at the jugular.
I'm very one thing I'm like all or nothing. I'm like, do you want to have a conversation with me about childhood trauma, or do you want me to have a conversation with me about Strictly? If it's the latter, I'm not interested.
I love that.
Unless it's about a Strictly contestant's childhood trauma. No. I just, you know, like I don't know. I just find that's where I find myself really, the magic happens, you know, just kind of in knowing that there is something a bit deeper there. So I wanted to have with this podcast, I just wanted to have conversations that, that I'm like, you know, with anything, with my books as well, it's like, I've gone through this thing, and if I've thought this thing, the chances are someone else has too, because I'm not special or different, do you know what I mean? Yeah. And then it's like, have you thought this thing too? And if so, do you want to come and hang out around this podcast? And we can kind of think this thing together and chat it out and not feel less like weirdos.
Those are the best podcasts though, aren't they? Like when you're listening to it, that's what I think works in the podcast world. Who would your dream guest be though? I mean, you've had some pretty brilliant ones on already, but you know, who do you really want to have on and what would you ask them about?
So I purposely so the first podcast I ever did, Mad World, which had like Prince Harry, Hunter Biden and stuff, you know, like I think we
no
can
one
get,
big then.
I think we can get like quite, I think sometimes...
I bet you didn't talk to them about it Strictly.
You'd be surprised. Off camera, that's where the... for me, I'm trying to get less bogged down in like celebrity guests. Because I think it's, for me, it's about the conversations, not the celebrity, if that makes sense. Like I'm interested in people more generally. So I don't have like a dream, you know, like obviously I'd love to sit like Michelle Obama or something, but like I think the likelihood of her coming and sitting in a little studio in West London and talking to someone on a show called The Life of Bryony is very unlikely. But I am not allowing that to manifest. So let me put that out there.
Yeah. Don't crush your future dreams, Bryony.
Michelle, if you are listening.
If you're listening. I mean, she's a regular listener to the Knit Mums podcast, old Michelle. So she might get in touch.
So I don't have, I guess I don't really have like a dream guest. I just have like sub thought, like conversations I want to have. I want to have, you know, I'm really working right now on episodes about hormones and mental health and, you know, from the sort of cradle to the grave, how that affects women and is dismissed. And, you know, I want to talk about people pleasing and I want to talk about, so I have like conversations I want to get out more, you know, I want to talk more about alcoholism. I want to talk more about binge eating disorder. I want to talk more about those things that I want to talk loudly about things that are normally whispered, if said at all.
When you were last on the pod, we were talking about your experience with Prince Harry on your podcast. And I just wondered, what's it like being mates with a couple who every single person has an opinion on? Because you must get sick of people asking you and then everyone's got their opinion about those particular people.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. Like it doesn't, it doesn't really matter what I say because people are like, well, the thing that makes me laugh is when people are like, oh, what are they like? And then you tell them and they're like, yeah, but you would say that because you know them. as if knowing people like disqualifies you from having an opinion about them. And I, you know, at that point I sort of switch off. So I don't, you know, like they are kind of like normal people to me it's a weird kind of one. They're not like, Bryony, please bow down to me or, you know.
please curtsy.
Yeah, no, like if I curtsy to them, they'd be like, are you all right?
She's having a moment.
They'd be like, Bryony, do you need some help?
It's off the floor.
I'm not curtsying to anyone. Like, I don't know. Like, I treat everyone the same, whether they're up there, down there, somewhere in the middle. Like, we're just humans with, like, you know, we shit and we giggle and, you know, and hopefully we do more of the giggling than the shitting.
That's a great bit of life advice there, Bryony.
Although actually, you want to be shitting regularly. That's a good thing.
And the takeaway from this podcast, folks, is poo regularly by Bryony Gordon.
For more of these gems, tune into The Life of Bryony.
And check your poo regularly.
Yes.
Oh, and your important. Boobs and all the other things. Absolutely.
Oh, dear.
Well, I'm going to end in the same crazy way that we've carried on, really. Last time you were on our podcast, Bryony, we ended the podcast with a question. Now, this was about 3 years ago, so you had a 8-year-old-ish. I had a 7-year-old and anyway. We used to ask our guests to sing us their lullaby.
Yeah, okay.
And you gave Annie and I our previous... my previous co-host, a rendition of Cuddles with Edie.
And sadly, it finished Annie off and she had to leave.
That's it. That was it. She left after Cuddles with Edie.
R.I.P. Annie.
And now I'm going to sing Cuddles with Alison, Cuddles with Alison. There's no better way to start the day.
There we go. See? And do you still sing it to your nearly 13-year-old? Please say yes.
I do. And she's like...
to cries of Mum!
Mum! No, she quite likes it. We have a thing. And then she's like, no, I'm not going to say this because it's going to embarrass her. But she would rather I just didn't sing at all. Like, I would like to say she'd rather I sang Taylor Swift to her, but she would absolutely rather I did not sing.
I'd quite like to sing Taylor Swift to me, actually, Bryony. I'm a big Swiftie.
Me? Well, I know, but like, the thing is that where would I even begin? Because... We've got a back catalogue to work with, and you know, nobody wants to hear me sing Taylor. Well, I'm I'm a big Swiftie too, Alison. I enjoyed your content from the Eras Tour.
The Eras Tour. Thank you, Bryony.
I spent a significant amount of my summer, like, basically just wanting to live on the Eras Tour, which is very teenage, and feeling like we went to the opening night in Edinburgh, and
did you?
Yeah, and then feeling like her people gave me tickets. I couldn't believe it.
I couldn't believe it.
I was like, what the? And an email came in.
That's because,
like,
your mates were Prince Harry, that is.
We would like to invite you to the any night of the Eras Tour. And then obviously assumed I would say Wembley. And I was like, I want to go to the opening night!
I want night one. I want to be there.
They were like, all right, Kino. They were like, maybe we don't want to invite her to the Eras
But then
Tour.
Did you spend the rest of the summer feeling like your Eras experience had ended and everyone else was living their best life?
It was basically...
There's the woman who went twice.
It was the closest I felt to a come down since I've got clean and sober. And, and I did. I felt very, like, jealous. I was like, oh, when she pulled Travis out on Wembley night three, I was like, oh.
Big that, moment.
I was like, that's her favourite child. She's forgotten about Edinburgh. She's forgotten about us at Edinburgh night one.
Wembley got all the treats. Sorry, Wendy.
Can you two hear yourselves?
Also, I was like, oh, she has this amazing ability to make it feel like really intimate, even though she's speaking to like 80,000 people.
All of our listeners have turned off, folks. All of them.
And I was like, you know, oh, she's like checking on everyone in the crowd. And then we like watched it on Disney Plus. And I was like, she did that in Los Angeles as well.
She made you feel special, though. That's their special skill. They make you feel special in each one.
She didn't have a fucking clue where she was. She just picked it out of a hat. We'll have Travis.
Can you blame her? The amount she did.
We'll have Florence, London's doing well, and, you know, we'll have so-and-so for there. And
I feel like you're dissing Taylor now, Bryony. I'm not okay with this.
I'm not okay. Like, actually, in truth, my ultimate podcast guest on Life of Bryony would be Tay-Tay. Taylor Swift. But there is a danger. I would never let her leave the studio. I would kidnap her. I sometimes have fantasies. Like, I actually had this fantasy yesterday. I was like tootling along and I was like,
where are we going with this? I
just imagining that me and Taylor were like in the back of a car, like chatting, like friends. Like, I imagine what, I just think we'd be really good friends. I think she'd love, I just think we would get on really well.
I'm with you. I have that fantasy personally.
I'm lost for words. Doesn't happen often.
Should we wrap this up, Wendy?
Just quickly. One more thing on the Taylor thing. I was doing this shoot on Monday with a fairly large brand with some very cool people that were like, just very cool young people who were, I don't know how I've ended up as one of the people on this campaign. Anyway, and they all had their individual shots and they were like playing like Tupac and like just really cool rap, hip hop. And then I came in and I was like the last person to have my individual shot. And they were like, what would you like to listen to, Bryony? And I was like, Taylor Swift. And they were like, oh. And then they all came in for the group shots and that Taylor Swift was still on. And it was like, we are never, ever, ever getting back together. And there's this like, these like young guns, like very cool people who were like, can we change the music? I was like, no.
No. Swifties no! forever. I love it. Oh, it's been brilliant. Such a joy to talk to you today, Bryony. Thank you so much for coming on the Knit Mamas podcast to Thanks. Share all of that with us.
Thanks. Do you know what? It's really made me feel, it's given me a little lift for today. So for that, I'm very grateful.
We are thrilled to have chatted to you. Thank you very much.
Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on all social channels, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Just type in Knit Mums and you'll find us. And if you liked what you've heard today, we'd love for you to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button, and share the podcast on all your socials.